I've got Eric Moore on right now with Soil Warrior. When you think about placement and timing, one of the things that we've been doing on our farm has been using strip till. And Eric, you certainly work with that a lot with the Soil Warrior machine, using it as a fertility placement tool. What are some of the things that you've learned that have helped guys make money?
You know, really, if we talk about making money or cutting costs, that's probably the biggest thing that I see. Questions from growers today is, can I get by a season or two by banding or placing that fertilizer? And we do see greater efficiencies, especially when we're putting those bands out. The thing that we want to do, an article that I was reading recently said that if we're in very low testing soils, let's say our growers have been stretching that fertility dollar for the last few years as commodity prices weren't very good, if we get very low testing soils and we put a single concentrated band, when that root mass hits that concentrated area, it can concentrate the roots there, but not grow roots in the rest of that soil, especially if it's very low testing. So that's the thing I try to tell growers today is, let's not put a single concentrated band out. Let's get more of a zone across where that whole crown of that root mass of that plant's going to be. Let's avoid the cost of a broadcast application with tie-up, but let's try to get a more concentrated zone from the soil surface down to 6 to 8 inches, and I think that's a better management positioning of that fertilizer.
Well, it's certainly where the soil is warmer, where there's a lot of that root system is going to be. That's where most of the roots will be, in that top 6 or 8 inches. So it makes a lot of sense to have the plant food right where the root system is going to be. We were talking just a little bit ago about how many soils now across our country are getting run down in terms of phosphorus or potassium. We've been removing so much with some of these high yield numbers that so many farmers have raised across the country. It's time we take another look at fertility for sure going into 2018.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we see growers working out different fertility management programs with landlords as well. You know, that's one of the things that we're always reluctant on rented ground to build those nutrient levels. I've talked to growers recently that said that they're actually establishing soil test levels on nutrients as they start that lease. And if they do building applications and the soil test levels are higher at the end of that lease, the landlord reimburses some of that cost. If the soil values drop, then the tenant is responsible for bringing those values back up.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of renegotiation on some of these things. And I know, like, even on our own farm, we've got a lot of cash rent that we've negotiated over time of, here's where the cash rent is. And the last couple of years with the market turning, we've had some pretty interesting conversations about that, look, here is what our actual numbers are. And, you know, if we don't change this number on in terms of the cash rent, we aren't going to, our only choice is to cut fertility. And that long term is not a good thing for your land. And, you know, it's not like we've got exorbitant costs on everything else on the farm. So if somebody else rents the ground, they're going to be stuck with the same situation.
Yeah, certainly are. And, you know, I think that's the dilemma that a lot of growers are in, is how do I maintain my highest productivity levels and weather some of these low commodity prices? And I think fertility placement and timing is something we didn't talk a lot about. Timing, we can influence some of that as well. If we're going to be putting on lower volumes of nutrients, we need to really make sure that we're timing those where that crop can utilize those when it has the maximum need or maximum uptake curves on that as well.
Yeah, and getting stuff just right where the root system is going to grow, there's no question there's been a lot more efficiency. That's why we've been using strip tillage on our farm for a number of years now, and certainly that's one of the reasons we've got Eric Moore with Soil Warrior on the show. Eric, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the information as always, and have a happy new year.
You too, Darren.
Got Ross Bender on with us right now. Ross is with Mosaic. And if you're listening yesterday, Ross had some pretty sobering numbers about what's happened with phosphorus levels in the soils across the country. And hey, we've got to pay the piper at some point here. And when you think about fertility placement and timing, some of those nutrients like phosphorus have to be accounted for.
Exactly. Good afternoon, Darren. Nice to talk with you again. Although those numbers are a little bit sobering, there's no time in the history of agriculture, however, though, that we have the flexibility with the tools today to help, you know, sort of work on those values. You know, we have pretty awesome application technology like we just heard about. We have pretty neat fertilizer technology, guidance technology that really helps us put those plant nutrients where the plant needs it. So we have these different technologies available to help us put those nutrients where they need to be, but all these different technologies can sometimes be a little bit overwhelming. So I always encourage producers to think about the statement about this. The closer you can apply the nutrient, whether that's physical location or the time of application, the better the recovery of those recovery efficiency of those nutrients will be. So that always seems to help.
What I think is interesting, too, as we look at this, I don't want to spend more money. I don't want to spend any more money on my farm, but I do need to get more yield out of the farm. How do I do it? And timing is one of the things that we are seeing farmers do across the country, just embracing a split application of nitrogen, for example. Is this something that we should be thinking about with some of the other nutrients as well?
Well, that's exactly. But it helps to know actually a little bit about the plant and the physiology and the timing of when those nutrients are important. That was part of my graduate work, and I will admit it's pretty overwhelming and kind of confusing, but nutrients like potassium, largely needed before tasseling, two-thirds to three-quarters are taken up before tasseling. That's just like nitrogen, but because nitrogen is something that's mobile in the soil and it has such a large requirement in total, some of which spills over into tasseling, reproductive development, you know, we continually look for ways to side dress or postpone some of those applications. Phosphate, when you think about nutrients like phosphate, you can think about sulfur and zinc sort of similarly, where you might be surprised in that while a little bit upfront obviously helps phosphorus, sulfur, and zinc, over half of phosphorus, sulfur, and zinc is accumulated during grain filling. So any application practice, fertilizer source that you can use or implement that delays the availability or improves the availability towards the back end of that growing season will obviously really help.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we're learning as we listen to some of the highest yielding producers around the country. They talk about, hey, you know what? We're throwing everything out at one shot at planting time because it's convenient for us. But it's kind of like eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner all by 6 a.m. By the time we get to 6 p.m., we're a herding unit, just like our plants are so overloaded with fertility up front, and then have no availability when they really need it, and it's just killing us in yield.
Yeah, so, you know, the important part of having adequate availability up front is that the plant sort of sets its trajectory towards yield, whether it senses good conditions or sort of poor and depleted conditions. It sort of sets that trajectory very early on in the growing season. And if it senses depleted conditions, there's virtually nothing you can do to change that trajectory. But not everything needs to be available up front, obviously. Environmentally and agronomically, there's reasons why that's not a good idea. So, again, practices and fertilizer sources and tools that you can do to extend that availability really helps. Depending on where in the country you are, you notice that phosphorus management, for example, takes on a lot of different looks. Some people broadcast it. Some folks like to strip-till. Some deep band. Some use a starter. Some use even top dress applications or side dress applications. So, I mean, there's a lot of different approaches to manage some of those different nutrients.
And it's amazing how just putting a little bit in a variety of different ways seems to impact the plant and be a positive versus throwing everything out all at one time in one application versus getting it spread out just a little bit and diversifying what you're doing. I've been talking with Ross Bender with Mosaic again today. Ross, we really appreciate having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You as well. We're talking fertilizer placement and timing on today's program. I know it's certainly something we focus on our farm, and now's the time to make those adjustments. If you're going to change something up, if you say, you know, I really want to have some in-furrow, or I really want to do 2x2, or even 2x2 on both sides of the row, like we're hearing some of the real high-yielding guys across our country, like Randy Dowdy and others talk about, a lot of different things that you can do, and now's the time to get that equipment adjusted. We'll be right back taking your calls and questions after this.
Grow your incentives, not weeds. Earn an additional $6 per acre in cash back when you apply Xtendimax herbicide with Vapor Grip technology on your Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans, along with endorsed herbicides from Roundup Ready Plus Crop Management Solutions. Visit growyourincentives.com to see your total incentives opportunity. Xtendimax is a restricted-use pesticide. Individual results may vary. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Farmers know that decisions can have a big impact on profit. What if you could make proactive decisions on your farm every day? With Farmer's Edge, now you can. Get daily high-resolution images of your fields powered by the largest private constellation of satellites in the world. Detect problems before they start. Monitor your farm like never before. Discover the potential of proactive farming. Farmer's Edge, launching decision agriculture into a new era.
What's the quickest way to ruin a nice spring day? Seeing glyphosate-resistant weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth get past your defenses and show up in your fields. And having to worry about how taking care of this year's problem is going to affect next year's corn crop. So how do you cover the gap between glyphosate and resistant weeds like water hemp and Palmer? Choose the post-emergence power of Cobra herbicide. Cobra not only gives you control over a broad spectrum of resistant weeds, it also suppresses white mold in soybeans and has zero carryover concerns for next year's corn crop. No matter what weed threat you're facing, the best solution is a diversified management program to cover the gap and stop resistant weeds. Valent USA Corporation has several fast-acting, broad-spectrum post-emergent control solutions, including Cobra, Resource Herbicide, and SelectMax Herbicide with Inside Technology. Talk with your retailer today to find out which one is right for your field, and visit valent.com/coverthegap for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Looking to build your next farm structure, hobby building, garage, or even a home? No matter the building style, you'll want to partner with Morton to build it. With more than 110 years experience, Morton Buildings provides the experience and quality you need in your new structure. And now, build your Morton for less during Morton's annual sales event. Hurry! These promotional prices end February 28th. Check us out online at MortonBuildings.com to learn more. Morton Buildings. For work, for life, for generations.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is fertilizer placement and timing. We're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. And if you're wondering, man, I wonder if I call, will I actually get on the radio? Will they actually talk to me? Absolutely, you will. Our call screener is pretty tough, though. It's my sister, Janelle. So if you can't get through our call screener today, I understand. She probably screened a lot of my calls growing up, too. Who knows, Janelle? Maybe there were a lot of people trying to get a hold of me at that time, but you were just cutting them off. Please call in. We'd love to hear from you, 844-44-AG-PHD. All right, one guy that never gets cut off here is Tim Dukert with AgriLiquid. Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Brian.
All right, we're talking about fertilizer placement and timing today. And when we think about placement, and certainly with AgriLiquid, the name kind of gives it away. You're working with liquid fertilizer. A lot of guys think about in furrow and 2x2. When we do that, we're always worried about injury. And this is something I know that you talk about quite often, is what should you be looking for if you're thinking about putting more into the in furrow or 2x2? How do you do that safely?
I guess there's a couple different ways that we can approach that. First of all, there's different in-furrow application methods. You have something that, like a collier tubular system, where it actually places the nutrients underneath the seed. If we're placing high amounts or high salt products, that's probably a bad place to place the nutrients. A little bit safer would be using a system, utilizing a seed firmer, place the nutrients over top of the seed, but either side of the seed trench. That's one way to get a little bit safer if we want to put some extra nutrients in and are worried about the safeness of that. From there, we could always do a little bit in furrow and the remainder 2x2 to get extra nutrient products on with our planter system. So that's a very good way to put additional things on and still remain seed safe.
You know, when you think about supplying nutrients, one of the things that we're always interested in is getting nutrients that are available. Because if we put out certain nutrients, especially some of the dry fertilizers, you see a real tough time getting availability. Even to some degree with manure, you've got some nutrients available quickly, some that may come available at some point in the future. This is a challenge for guys because they really want to put out stuff that they can use this year and count on. What do you do to ensure good availability of the fertilizer you're putting out?
At AgriLiquid, we've got a product line that is going to be protected and using chelation and other forms of technology, so we can put those nutrients out there and they will be released over a period of time. So, number one, we're protecting against tie-up in the soil, and number two, releasing it and providing availability to that crop over time. Now, we still want to put those nutrients in the zone of uptake near the plant roots so we get the best utilization out of those. And the other products that we could look at in the same fashion and do the same type of things with too, so that we are protecting them and protecting them from that tie-up and making them available when they're needed to the plant.
You know, that timing and getting things out there when the plant needs it is so important. We're seeing people go with things like the Y-drop system, for example, in season. I know we've seen that with nitrogen. Should we be looking at other nutrients in that same type of application?
Certainly. Just as I'm sure you ate breakfast this morning, I ate breakfast. I like to eat lunch and usually dinner too. Our plants want to eat constantly throughout the day and every day. So we want to provide those nutrients as often as we can. Certainly that soil is going to provide them over time, but if we can look at ways to provide them throughout the season and, again, prevent tie-up in the soil or just making sure that they're available to that plant, either that's getting them in the root system or over top of the root system with a product like the Y-drop or using foliar feeding methods. One thing that comes to mind is the 360 undercover units that we can actually feed that plant foliar throughout the season too.
Yeah, certainly there are a lot of ways to get nutrients out there. It's important that we look at all of them as we set up our plans for this year. Really pleased to have you on today, Tim Dukert with AgriLiquid. Have a happy new year, Tim.
Thank you. Thank you, and stay warm.
We've got Gabe with us now. He's down in southeast Missouri. Gabe, how are you doing today?
Doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. What's on your mind today?
Well, you know, Missouri's put in the new dicamba regulation about June 1st. And with that being said, there's some growers around here, you know, trying to get a head start on getting their soybeans planted early. And when I say early, April 1st, April 10th, somewhere along in there. And I've never planted that early. But the ground, you know, won't be perfect condition soil temperature wise. What specific things should I do that I, you know, haven't done before? Would I need to put either seed treatment or any kind of inoculant or something on the soybean that I, you know, for planting cooler soils?
Well, that's a great question. And you know what? That's an awesome observation as well that, all right, if we're going to be limited to June 1st, that's the longest we can go, we need to have a good crop canopy before then. And planting early may give us a better shot at getting that crop canopy. Giving a good nutrition program to our crop could lead to a better crop canopy early. And I think I'd look at that too when you're selecting Xtend soybeans. Which ones are just kind of tall, thin line beans, and which ones are actually going to fill that row in? Because if you fill the row in, crop canopy is still our best and cheapest weed control that we've got out there. So that's one thing I would look at in soybean selection. I'd look for beans that are going to canopy early, some that have more branching to them. I think that'll be a big advantage, especially if we're limited in the time frame that we can spray dicamba. The other things that we look at, because we start planting beans, so I find it interesting as we go to different parts of the country. So April 10th, you would consider that early, Gabe, for your part of the world. When do you normally start planting?
Well, I mean, it might not be early, but I mean, it's, you know, we're still planting corn or trying to finish up corn
okay.
by that time.
Okay.
So I mean, it would be a little early. You know, perfect year when it's not wet or anything like that. Yeah, most people would try and start by the 15th, the 20th, but if you're growing seed, they won't let you, you know, for seed companies, they won't let you plant till May 1st.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting because where we're at, quite a ways north from you here in South Dakota. Yeah, May 1st is for sure we'll be rolling on soybean planting May 1st if we had a decent spring, like you say, and that can change a lot of things. I mean, if it's dry and warm, sure, corn would be all done long before then, no problem, and we'll get right into beans. But this year, I know we're going to push to get our beans in a little bit earlier, maybe even that last week in April, all the way north here in South Dakota. And what we're doing that's making it work, we're really focused on seed treatment. That's been a big thing. We're conscious of which fungicides are on the seed. We've been really seeing some advancements in that. And you look at a lot of the major manufacturers now, the different types of fungicides that they're putting on seed is so much better than the basic Apron Max that we used to use way back in the day. Now we've got a lot of really complex three and even more mode of action fungicides that we're putting right on the seed. So that's something I'd look at, multiple modes of action with the fungicides. Some people here are even having success putting fungicide in furrow. Now, we haven't with soybeans because we're generally not getting them planted until May. But on corn, for sure, that we put in the ground in April, we've had some big gains with a fungicide in furrow. And then certainly that biological component, like you talked about, inoculant. But we're also using some other biologicals right on our seed or in our furrow. Things like Nutricycle is something we've had really good luck with putting in furrow with soybeans. We've seen a little better emergence with that and a little better stand.
All right. Would you recommend any kind of zinc or anything like that? Sulfur? I mean,
well, I think a total fertility program is great. Soybean seed is so sensitive to fertilizer, though. I would not put a whole bunch in the furrow. But if you were over in a 2x2 or something like that, you sure could add a little bit that way.
Okay. All right. Well, that answers my question.
You bet. Hey, great idea with early planting on soybeans. And I'm sure you're not the first guy to think about that. But, I mean, great idea trying to get the soybeans to canopy that much quicker to make this dicamba system work without affecting our neighbors the way it has in the past. Hey, Gabe, thank you so much. Good luck this spring and Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
A little lower, lower, right here, right over my wheat field. Perfect.
You sure?
Yeah, hold steady while I aim.
Aim? Is that a rocket launcher?
Yep, guy at the surplus said it'll kill all the weeds.
You just blew up my truck!
Oh, sorry about that.
There's a simpler way to protect your spring wheat. Use Perfect Match Herbicide for the broadest spectrum of broadleaf weed and grass control in a single product. Learn more at simpleweedcontrol.com. Always read and follow label directions.
If your fertilizers aren't formulated to maximize your efficiency, if you can't mix all the P, K, and micros your crop needs into one prescription application, if you have to add products to improve and invigorate your soil biology, then you need to expect more from your fertilizer. With AgroLiquid's advanced technology, you can expect more. A lot more. Bring on the A-Team. To find the nutrient coach near you, visit agroliquid.com.
What is the Corvus Zone? It's the one place broadleaf weeds and grasses don't stand a chance. Corvus is the only corn herbicide that delivers three levels of defense against broadleaf weeds and grasses, including resistant weeds. Burn down takes out early weeds, residual prevents new weeds, and reactivation with rain gets late weeds. Want to keep it weed-free all season? Welcome to the Corvus Zone. Corvus, the number one pre-emergence corn herbicide from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
In soybeans, nodulation is essential for nitrogen fixation. But how can you help it happen in fields that are low in pH or cooler soil conditions? Monsanto BioAg has answered that question with microbial seed applied solutions. Powered by nature, these inoculants work to establish high populations of rhizobia across a variety of conditions, helping with optimum nodulation and increased performance in your soybeans. Learn more at monsantobioag.com/inoculant.
Farmers know that decisions can have a big impact on profit. What if you could make proactive decisions on your farm every day? With Farmer's Edge, now you can. Get daily high-resolution images of your fields powered by the largest private constellation of satellites in the world. Detect problems before they start. Monitor your farm like never before. Discover the potential of proactive farming. Farmer's Edge, launching Decision Agriculture into a new era.
Why treat your entire field for white mold if only parts of it are affected? Contan soil fungicide sprayed this fall after harvest is the only proactive way to reduce white mold potential for future crops. Locating and spot treating your affected acres with Contans every year and every crop is an affordable and effective control strategy for white mold. Contans fungicide attacks and reduces the sclerotia bodies in the soil that cause the problem. Scout the symptoms and treat the problem this fall with Contans. To find out more, go to sipcamrotam.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic has been and continues to be fertilizer placement and timing. We're taking your calls and questions as well at 844-44-AG-PHD. And if fertilizer isn't what you'd like to talk about, we'd certainly take your agronomic questions too on any topic. Got Austin Hively with us right now with Golden Harvest. Austin, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So seed corn selection is certainly one thing that guys will ask you about, but then they wanted to know, how do I get the most out of this corn? And certainly fertility is one of those topics that you have to go through with farmers. What are you seeing your best yielding farmers do for fertility placement and timing that you think some other guys should know so they could get those kind of yields too?
You know, I think when you look at that approach, it's more than just the fertility piece. I mean, bringing in soil sampling and variable rate applications to making sure those nutrients are where we need them, you know, in the most effective areas of the field. So when you bring that all together, you know, not only the soil sampling and the placement of nutrients, but making sure the timing's right. So, you know, you're not, you know, making sure your nitrogen is there when it's needed, you know, when that crop is really taking up nitrogen rather than, you know, at different parts of the season there. So kind of a whole farm approach there, incorporating a lot of different tools.
You know, that nitrogen piece is a big one. There's no question about it. A lot of guys are really concerned about it, and rightly so, because if we run short of N, it's going to hurt us in yield. There's no question about it. But we're seeing guys be successful even using less just by splitting out that application and spreading it out through the season. What kind of tools are you seeing farmers utilize? Are you seeing a lot of guys doing soil testing? Are you seeing plant tissue testing, these kinds of things? What do farmers use to help them dial in the right rates?
You know, I think we see a lot of soil testing of different magnitudes, and also some of the tissue testing. There's also some digital ag tools and whatnot that some guys are using. Again, just kind of using whatever approach that the guys have found to be successful there. But to your point about splitting up those rates, you know, I think that's a really critical thing that, if the logistics of it allow, you know, you can maximize your inputs when that crop needs it, and then use those tools to really decipher whether that's needed or not, you know, whether it's a tissue test or whatever it may be. So.
You know, the P and K are certainly big nutrients too for the crop, and as well as secondary micros. And rather than dive into all those, I'll just focus for right now, at least on the biggest ones. When you look at P and K, as farmers that you work with have gotten higher and higher yielding crops, what are they doing to go after this P and K component? Are they trying to utilize different things like manure and compost, or are they just increasing rates of commercial fertilizer?
You know, in our area in Northwest Iowa, we've got a lot of manure applications, and so that's probably one avenue. There's a lot of corn on corn and a lot of manure applications made. But another way is kind of going back to that soil sampling piece and using variable rate technologies to ensure that, you know, in areas where more fertilizer is needed, we're getting that adequate amount. Whether that be a higher producing acre or, you know, by deciphering those acres that maybe don't need quite as much due to really high rates from previous years and things like that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much variance out there. And I think almost every farmer that I talked to, if I said, all right, if you had to pick a sweet spot on your farm, where would it be? Just about everybody knows one or two spots that they say, you bet. That's my honey hole, as some would call it, that, wow, I can plant my best hybrid there, and I almost always get my best yields. But bringing up the rest of the farm, that's been a real critical thing. I know for us on our farm, taking that bottom 10 or 20% of our acres and getting them to up to an average level, at least, at the same time as we're building up our best parts of the field to really go for those top yields. That's been huge. And like you were mentioning, Austin, the soil sampling piece to enable you to do that is really cool. And now we've got a bunch of tools too, where farmers can really dial these things in and make those applications themselves.
Yeah, a lot of great tools available. And, it's really, really interesting to be able to sit down and dive into some of those areas, as you spoke of, trying to build up the areas that maybe have been problems for, multiple year on end there. And being able to build those up along with the areas that, are typically pretty good. So.
Yep. Lots of things. And I know back to that hybrid piece so many times, and this fall was certainly one of them where I talked to one farmer that'd say, yep, that was the best hybrid on my farm. And then right across the road, his neighbor would say, man, that hybrid kind of fell apart for me. And when we start digging in, so often we saw just the timing of fertility applications and then just the total fertility overall with soil tests and applied maps and so forth really told a story of, wow, right across the road, we did a lot better job getting the nutrients that plant needed so it could succeed.
Yeah, yep. I think we saw a lot of variance, too, in the types of products that were used for nutrients, between differences between manure or commercial fertilizer and things like that as well. So, yeah, a lot of variability.
Yep, no doubt about it. I've been talking with Austin Hively with Golden Harvest. Austin, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time and information today.
Hey, thank you. Have a good day.
Bet you as well. I got Brian back on with us now. And Brian, thinking about this fertilizer placement and timing, with strip till, that's been a big positive for us on corn as well as on soybeans. Anything else you're thinking about in your mind when we think about placement and timing changes that we've made over the last few years that have really stood out to you?
Well, I talked about it a little bit earlier in the show today, but it makes a lot of difference where you're at, what your soil type is, and irrigation. Where I'm going with this is, for me, when I have dry land conditions, I have not a lot of rainfall, and I have heavy soils, it's going to be really tough to get a lot of nutrients into the plant. And so placement can be even more critical. If my roots can't find that fertility and find it quickly, we may have a problem if you don't have your soil built up very well. In a sandier soil with irrigation, the nutrients are going to move around a little bit more in the soil. There's more water there, so you can pump the nutrients into the soil and into the plant. So you've got a lot more flexibility. So I would just say, in my opinion, I think that the placement gets to be even more of an issue for us in our situation. But, I mean, it's a challenge for anybody. We all want to figure out how can we spend the least amount and get it right into the plant, have it do what it's supposed to do, not have any left over for the future, just so we know that we've used everything, every dollar we spent went into this year's crop, is all I'm getting at. How do we do that? There's no perfect answer. There's never going to be, I don't think. But I do think we got a lot of technologies today that make things better. I really do like strip till in our situation. And, they're going to be more foliar products. There are a lot of newer technologies that make this more possible today than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, we were talking about it earlier, that phosphorus and zinc, over half of it's needed after tassel in corn. So if we don't have a great soil program, it's pretty tough in dryland farming in areas that don't get a ton of rainfall. Even in the areas that do get a ton of rainfall, to apply surface applications of phosphorus and zinc late season and still get them into the plant. You've got to get that soil fertility built up. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at that. I guess for us, a lot of times it ends up being a fall application. We do see some guys doing spring applications, but it's pretty tough if you're going to be surface applied to get all that stuff into the crop unless you get lots of rainfall. I know even some of our deeper bands, when we've had those super dry years, we just haven't got the soil soaked completely to get the fertilizer, not only to release from a dry pellet if we use dry fertilizer, but also to move it around and get it into that root system, especially with those immobile nutrients in the soil like phosphorus and zinc. Been talking fertilizer placement and timing all through the show here, but we're going to get to your Ag PhD mailbag questions coming up next.
Commodity Classic is where your understanding of agriculture can grow beyond your wildest expectations. You'll be challenged to think differently about how you farm. You'll be among the first to see the newest ideas, equipment, and innovation. And you'll be around thousands of positive people who share your passion for agriculture. Grow beyond at America's largest farmer-led, farmer-focused convention and trade show. Commodity Classic, Tuesday, February 27th through Thursday, March 1st in Anaheim, California. Discover more at commodityclassic.com.
Ideal for herbicide applications, the Ultra Low Drifts Large Air Inducted Droplets were designed to eliminate driftable fines without sacrificing coverage. Its thick three-dimensional pattern creates multiple angles for the spray to cover the target. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass agronomic rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
Weeds have grown tough, especially glyphosate-resistant Palmer pigweed and mare's tail, but Sharpen herbicide is tougher. Powered by Kixor herbicide technology and offering an additional site of action, Sharpen herbicide drives burn down 3 to 5 times faster than 2,4-D or glyphosate. Part of the BASF Advanced Weed Control System, Sharpen herbicide offers not only unmatched pre-plant interval flexibility, but also cleaner fields and improved operational efficiency. To learn more, visit advancedweedcontrol.basf.us. Always read and follow label directions.
This is a demonstration, of what it's like, to maximize your nitrogen with Instinct and NSERV.
Instinct and NSERV nitrogen stabilizers work like an echo, but instead of your voice coming back to you, you get cash back, an extra $21 per acre on average. So don't just stabilize nitrogen, maximize it, and your corn will give you the max in return. Learn more at maxinmaxout.com.
Sometimes everything is stacked against you. The unexpected happens. You need to change your plans, and quick. That's when it's great to have a team that allows you to do whatever is necessary to win. AgriLiquid has the products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition. When nothing is certain except your need to feed your crop fast, you need your A-team. Find a nutrient coach near you. Visit AgriLiquid.com.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin. Welcome back. You are listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Got a number of your emails in. We're getting to those right now during the Ag PhD mailbag time. First one comes from Kay in Pocahontas, Iowa. She said, thank you for entering that wonderful float in the Rose Bowl parade. In my opinion, it was the absolute best in the parade. I wish you the very best in the year ahead. Hey, thanks, Kay. We really appreciate all the support. Got one from Evan here. He's got a fertility question. He said, actually, I've got two fertility questions for you. I've got some 5.4 to 5.9 pH ground. Now, I put on lime this fall at a maximum of 2,400 pounds of actual calcium. For Christmas, by the way, I got the Hands-On Agronomy book by Neil Kinsey, and I'd like to tell you it's an excellent recommendation. It's awesome. He said, my concern now is once I fix this pH and get it up to, say, even 6.8, will the calcium and magnesium ions really tie up all those clay colloids? Will it prevent me from building up the weaker charged potassium ions to the 5 to 6% base saturation I'd like? What do you think about that, Brian? Would you fill your soil up with calcium so you couldn't attach the potassium? What's been your experience?
Okay, you may lose me. I don't have a connection. I'm sorry about that. But if you lose me, I'll just have to call you back. But we've talked about pH, well adding. If you can build soil potassium, we've done it on our farm. We've proven it's true, but that pH thing at the
yeah, you're cutting out a little bit, Brian. And what Brian's saying there is we've done it on our farm. We've taken low pH soil that we are liming and added potassium at the same time. And when there's a lot of change going on in the soil, that is a good time to build up potassium from our experience. So we've had good luck doing that. And we talked to Neil about that a little bit too, about, well, what's your experience been? And he said, well, doing things one at a time, I haven't had good luck building up potassium in that situation, but doing things all together so there is some change going on, that could be the difference in why we're seeing the gain that he hadn't in tests where they've just done one thing at a time. The other question that Evan had, he said, should I focus on building the K first? No, Evan, I'd go ahead and get everything done, and I'd focus on that pH right away. But his second question, he said, let's say that...
Wait. Hold up. Yeah, so that's Darren's opinion. My opinion is I'm doing everything all at once.
Yeah, that's what I said. So, that's what I just said. He said, should I focus on building...
pH first.
No, his question was, should I focus on the K first to make sure I got the K out there before I do this? And I said, no, we've done it all at the same time. Right. Of course, hey, if your budget says I can only do one thing, I'd work on getting that pH adjusted first. And I agree with Evan that he got the lime out there. That's what I would have done. How about you, Brian? If you could only do one, is that what you'd do?
Well, yes. Yes.
Okay, great.
Sure. Great. That's absolutely what I do.
All right, now here's his second question. He said, let's say there isn't any more holding capacity for potassium. What happens to the K if you keep putting it on anyway? I don't know that there isn't any more holding capacity, Evan. And I think as you're putting more K out, this whole base saturation concept that you're shooting for of trying to get potassium up to 5 to 6%, if you're low on something, adding more is going to take away the percentage from the rest. Like, let's just say that you had a pizza or a pie at your house, and you have a brother like Brian, and Brian wants to eat the whole pizza, so he's got 100%. But if I take half of it, I'd necessarily cut Brian down to only 50% of a pizza instead of a whole. So you're going to do that with your potassium. As you put it out there, you're going to adjust that percentage a little bit, in my experience. Would you say the same thing, Brian?
Yeah. I guess I'm not getting too hung up on this, worrying about, you know, holding capacity in the soil and everything for potassium. I just understand that I've got a pH issue. I want to be working on that. If I have a potassium issue, I've got to be working on that. And if in the short term you say I can't afford to build my soil K level, that's fine. Then just do some liquid, whether that's 2x2 or strip till or something, a highly available form. We do some of that every year. I mean, I think that's good practice. But you got to make sure that you're somehow feeding that plant, because just because you fixed one thing, that doesn't mean, oh, now I'm going to have dramatically better yield if I'm in a terrible position on another nutrient.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Evan, and really, really admire the effort you're putting into improving your soil. I think that's fantastic. I got one from Dale here, Brian. This one's kind of timely. He said, would there be any way to attend a soils clinic via the web? We're kind of far away from one this year, and that might be our best option.
No. The reason why is it's a full-day deal, and it's so beneficial if you're actually there. We have some kind of hands-on things for you. And also, we don't,
let's put it this way, for both our agronomy workshops and our soils clinics, we're much more unfiltered than we kind of have to be on TV or radio, so we can more tell it like it is than we already do. Also, you get the chance to ask your personal questions, that type of thing. I mean, it's just it's always better being there. If you want some of that information, we go through that during the course of the year on IPHD radio and TV, just not all in one setting, in the same format with the same examples and that type of thing. So I guess I'd encourage you to come, and I realize it might be a long ways away and that type of thing, but too often I think on the farm we think, oh, I can't spend $1,000 to travel three states away to hear a good speaker. And I'm not just talking about us, I'm talking about anybody that's out there. And if they have good information, spend $1,000. Just think about what you paid to go to college, okay? And what kind of information was that? Yep, some of it was probably fantastic, but there was probably other information that you don't use anymore. So if there's some way to listen to, you know, some of these really high-yield farmers or something like that, I mean, whatever you have to do, just invest a little bit of money and go do it. So I'd suggest coming. But otherwise, just keep listening to us on AgPHD Radio and watch our television show, and eventually we'll cover a lot of those same things.
Yeah, John had written in about, hey, I don't see a workshop in our area this year. What are you thinking, you know, for the future? And I know you had commented to John already, but the same thing would be true here, that we do move those workshops around on a regular basis.
Yeah, we do.
And we'll likely be in your area down the road. Who knows? But also, you know, we're at other things like Commodity Classic and different ag meetings and so forth that happen in certain areas. So just kind of keep your eye out for that and see if we do happen to get a little bit closer. And as always, you can send questions in radio@agphd.com. We're more than happy to look at soil tests or talk about any specific issues that you may have. One of those specific issues you may be interested in, this one came in from one of our listeners. He said, soil compaction. You're talking about that, and it might be an issue with no-till, but I look at the no-till thing as we never get a chance to go through and fix anything. So for me, using some sort of type of reduced conservation tillage or a strip till operation seems like you're getting the best of both worlds. Is that what you've found?
Yep. Yes, absolutely. So there are some people that get really dead set on, well, I'm no-till and I absolutely can't do tillage. Or I'm in this and I absolutely have to do it that way. I couldn't care less. I'm open-minded to say, look, maybe there's a better way to do it, maybe a better idea. I'm willing to try just about anything if it could possibly help my farm. So I'm not sold on you can fix compaction with no-till in our climate where I can't do any cover crops because, I mean, we plant when the frost sometimes is still coming out of the soil, and we harvest when there's frost in the soil. I don't have time for cover crops. How do you do that? I don't know how you do that without some form of tillage like strip till, zone building, whatever.
All right. Last thing, I know there was dicamba news out of Arkansas again today. True Blue Farmer sent in a response. He said, we used 100% dicamba beans last year. Labeling was followed. We talked to neighbors ahead to make sure we didn't have any issues if they didn't have dicamba beans next to us. We had really clean fields, no plant stress, and yields were good. Thanks for that comment. Really appreciate that. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on with dicamba. Brian, any last words?
Yeah, like the dicamba thing. I'm in Arkansas, and I guess I don't understand why a state feels like it has to go against the federal label. I realize there were problems last year, but I think most of them are able to be solved.
Yep, it'll be interesting here the rest of this off season, heading into the next planting season as seed decisions are made and regulation or regulatory decisions are made as well, how things end up. Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more AgPHD Radio.